Chapter 49. Cress was getting antsy. The royal nuptials were slated to begin in a mere 27 minutes, and as far as she could tell, all guards and security personnel were still very much at their stations. On top of that, she and Wolf were running out of ways to make themselves inconspicuous without having to relocate their seats. So far, they'd each nibbled at the prawn hors d'oeuvres being waiter passed. Cress 1, Wolf 6, taken turns excusing themselves to pretend to use the washroom while really trying to discern if any of the guards appeared concerned about a potential security breach, and three times Cress had had to laugh dreamily and hold Wolf's hand in order to get some loitering female admirer to mosey on. It was the most impressive acting she'd ever done, because touching Wolf made her uneasy, and it was difficult to imagine him making any jokes.
"Maybe we should start thinking of a plan B," Cress murmured when she noticed that the symphony had begun replaying their set.
"Already done," said Wolf.
She peered up at him. "Really? What is it?"
"We continue on to the security center as planned. I just have to knock out a lot more guards between here and there."
She chewed on her lip, not terribly enthusiastic with Plan B. Then,
"There, look."
She followed his gesture. Two guards were speaking with their heads lowered. One had badges indicating a significantly higher rank. He pointed down a corridor in the direction of the research wing.
Well, it was really in the direction of just about anything, but Cress hoped he was talking about a disturbance in the research wing.
That would mean that the others had made it inside and raised the alarms. A second later, the two guards left the ballroom.
"Do you think they've done it?" Cress said.
"Time to find out."
Wolf offered her his elbow, and together they meandered out into the main corridor. The remaining guards paid them no attention as they turned down a connecting hallway. Cress kept repeating the instructions that she'd memorized. Take the fourth hallway on the right, past the courtyard with the tortoise fountain, then the second left. Her heart began to pound fervently in her chest. Twice, they were stopped by palace staff, and twice, they asked for directions like confused, slightly drunk wedding guests, and had to backtrack to a safe hiding place before Wolf deemed it safe to move again. But no alarm was raised, and no guards came for them. Cress knew they had already been captured on countless cameras set through the palace, but she and Wolf wouldn't be recognizable like Cinder or Thorn or Dr. Erland. And even if they did raise suspicions, she hoped everyone would be too distracted by the emergency in the research labs to care. Still, the farther they got from the ballroom, the less likely it was that anyone would buy their innocence act. She was grateful when Wolf's pace picked up. Cinder and Iko would be waiting on them now, and they were running out of time. They reached a sky bridge that locked together two of the palace's towers. The glass floor showed a peaceful stream bubbling underneath, amid lush grasses and heavy-headed chrysanthemums. Past the bridge, they found themselves in a circular lobby, with empty seating arrangements carved from dark wood, statues of mythical creatures circling the perimeter, and a jungle of potted bamboos and orchids giving the room a heady scent. Recognizing the space, Cress marched to a 3-foot carving of a luck dragon and spun it around on its pedestal to face the wall. "Lunar camera in the left eye," she explained, then hurried toward the elevators. A white android stood in the center of the elevator bank, with its pronged grippers folded in front of its abdomen. It flashed a blue sensor over them. "I apologize for the inconvenience," it said in a perfect monotone meant to convey a diplomatic lack of bias. "We are experiencing a level 1 security breach and all elevators have been temporarily shut down. Please enjoy a hot cup of tea while we wait for clearance." One of its prongs gestured to an alcove where a machine held a fine porcelain teapot, steaming at its spout, and an assortment of leaves and spices.
"Do you have security override capabilities?" Cress asked the android.
"I do, but only an official code or..."
Cress crouched down and swiveled the android away from her.
"Don't suppose you have a screwdriver or something we can use to open the control panel?"
A palace official with sufficient clearance.
Wolf stooped over her, dug his fingernails into the groove, and snapped the whole panel off in his fist.
Could override a level one security breach. I apologize for the continued inconvenience, but I have to ask that you...
Wolf pulled the port screen that the doctor had given him out of his pocket and passed it to Cress.
She yanked out a connector cable and plugged it into the android, stopping the automatic diagnostic scan before it could begin. She began a manual search for the security override settings.
Stop tampering with official government property. Tampering with a royal android could result in a fine of up to 5,000 univs and 6 months of...
Identity confirmed. Royal advisor Con Torin. Security override complete. Awaiting instructions.
Elevator to main floor, said Cress. Proceed to elevator A.
Cress ejected the cable. Wolf pulled her to her feet as the nearest doors opened and tugged her inside. Her heart was thumping as the elevator descended. She imagined those doors opening again onto an army of guards, their guns aimed and ready. She figured that by now, they were no doubt being watched. Thorne's distraction could only count for so much, and there were two cameras in each elevator in the palace. The only question was how long it would take any guards to reach them once they figured out where they were heading. The elevator came to a stop. The doors hesitated for too long, and her pulse fluttered wildly until they opened onto an empty hallway. She released a long-held breath. This floor of the palace was mostly business space, used for diplomatic meetings and the offices of a multitude of government officials. She recognized bits and pieces of it. The name plaque on that desk, the painting on that wall. In her head, Cress was back in her satellite, even as she and Wolf jogged through the carpeted corridor. She was seeing Wolf and herself through the cameras along the ceilings. She was picturing how the two of them would have looked to her from up there, always disconnected and uninvolved and watching. Watching. As they rounded a corner, she imagined herself clicking to another feed. As they passed one camera, she pictured it changing from their front view to their backs. They reached the next elevator bank without issue, though this one had no watchful android. She tapped the elevator key, but it remained blank. The words, "Elevators temporarily down due to level one breach," were scrolled across its screen in red text. Cress scowled and dug her fingernails around the frame. Surely there was a way to get clearance in the event that someone important enough needed to get past, but without a designated android. She was grabbed by the elbow and hauled back. She yelped, thinking for a moment a guard had captured her, but it was only Wolf pulling her toward an alcove.
Stairs, he said, yanking open a door.
As it shut behind them, Cress heard the sounds of boots clomping in the distance. Her heart leaped into her throat, and she glanced at Wolf to see if he'd heard. But before she could speak, he swept her over one shoulder and was jumping over the stairs, leaping down to the landing in a single bound. She squealed, but then clamped her hand over her mouth to rein in her sudden terror.
Down, down, down. Finally, they passed a plaque labeled Sub-Level D, Maintenance/Security. This time, when Wolf set her down and pushed open the door, it felt as if they were no longer inside the palace at all. The walls were plain white, the floors dull concrete gray. The stairwell had spilled them into a small lobby, with the elevator off to their left and a cluttered desk in front of them. Behind the desk was a room fully enclosed in tinted glass, where an empty chair sat before a bank of 36 screens showing security footage within the palace and the surrounding property. Four of the screens were flashing security breach warnings. And then, there was the guard, aiming a gun at them.
Stay where you are. Put your hands where I can see them.
Cress shakily moved to follow his command, but before her fingertips could even brush her hair, Wolf had shoved her out of the way. She cried out and fell to the ground. Her dress ripped somewhere in the lining, and a gunshot echoed off the concrete. She screamed and covered her head.
Cress, get up, now!
Pulling her arms away, she saw that the guard was unconscious and slumped against his desk. Bending down, Wolf kicked the gun away, then slid the guard toward the glass door and held his wrist over the ID scanner.
A light flickered green.
Come on, there were more guards right behind us.
Trembling, Cress pushed herself off the floor and followed Wolf into the security control room. Chapter 50. Am I wearing this right? Cinder said, fidgeting with the belted wraparound blouse that had three different ties that were supposed to lace together in some mysterious fashion.
Yes, it's fine, said Aiko. Would you stop moving your head?
She slapped her hands on Cinder's ears to hold her head still. Cinder shifted from foot to foot, trying to calm her racing thoughts while Aiko twisted her hair into a pinching bun that made her scalp throb. It seemed as if it had been hours since Thorn and Dr. Erland had left them, though the clock counting the seconds in her head claimed it had been less than 17 minutes. In one corner of her vision was a news feed hosting its own countdown, the countdown to the start of the royal wedding. Cinder shut her eyes and tried to will away another bout of nausea. She'd never been so nervous in her entire life, and it wasn't just the waiting or the knowledge that so many things could go wrong, or the terror that she could be caught and returned to prison at any minute. What really terrified her, what really made her nerves hum, was knowing that she was going to see Kai again, face to face, looking into his eyes for the first time since she'd fallen in the palace gardens. At the time, his expression was so filled with shock and betrayal, her heart had split in two. Especially when not an hour before she had stood dripping wet at the top of the ballroom stairs and Kai had looked up at her and smiled. Smiled. The two expressions could not have been more different, and they'd both been directed at her. She didn't know what to expect when he saw her now, and the uncertainty was terrifying.
Cinder, are you watching the news?
She refocused on the news broadcaster who was reporting word of a temporary delay to the ceremony. They were being told that all was well and the ceremony would begin shortly, but that the security team was taking extra precautions.
That's it. Let's go.
Only once they peered down the service corridor in each direction, confirming both that no one was around and that the pale lights on the nearest ceiling cameras were off, did Cinder begin to appreciate the extent of her vulnerability. She was the most wanted criminal in the world, returning to the scene of her crime. But there was no changing her mind now. She sent the news broadcast away, pulling the palace blueprint over her vision instead.
Locating now, she said, using her internal positioning system to mark where she and Aiko stood,
before inputting the tracker code for Emperor Kai that Cress had given them. She held her breath while it searched, and searched. And then, there he was, a green dot in the north tower, 14th floor, the sitting room connected to his personal chambers. He was pacing. She shivered. She was so close to him, after being a galaxy apart.
Got him.
She kept to hallways that she expected to be unoccupied. She found herself continuously glancing at the cameras on the ceilings, but not one of them moved or flashed or indicated that it was turned on, and slowly Cinder's paranoia began to fade.
Cress had done it. She'd shut down the security system.
Then they rounded a corner into the elevator bank of the North Tower, and Cinder crashed into a woman. She stumbled back.
Oh, sorry.
The woman eyed Cinder. She was a member of the staff, dressed in the same blush-toned top and black pants that they were. Cinder called up her glamour, turning her cyborg hand into a human one and giving her complexion the same flawless tone as an escort's. She flashed a smile that she hoped hid her surprise and bowed. It took a few heartbeats more to realize why she was so startled. Not because they'd run into someone here in the hallway, but because she hadn't sensed this woman around the corner. It was a feeling so subtle, she'd hardly known she was doing it before, reaching out with her consciousness and lightly touching on the bioelectricity that shimmered off every human being. She'd gotten used to feeling Thorn and Wolf and Jason and Dr. Erland when they were nearby, their presence like a shadow in her subconscious, It was instinctual, no more difficult than breathing. But this woman was a blank slate to her. Like Cress, a shell. Like Aiko.
My apologies, said the woman, returning Cinder's bow. This wing of the palace is off limits to anyone without a crown-issued pass. I must ask you to leave.
We have a pass, said Aiko, smiling brightly. We've been asked to check with His Imperial Majesty to see if he requires any refreshments while we wait for the ceremony to begin.
She made to step around the woman, but a palm shot out and pressed against her sternum. The woman's serene gaze, though, remained on Cinder.
You are Lynn Cinder, she said. You are a wanted fugitive. I am required to alert authorities.
Sorry, but this is a bad time for me. Stepping back, Cinder raised her prosthetic hand and fired a tranquilizer dart at the woman's thigh. It clanged, the tip catching briefly in the fabric of her pants before it fell to the floor. That was all the confirmation she needed. Cinder clenched her jaw and swung for the side of the woman's head, but the woman ducked and whipped a leg up, her foot catching Cinder in the side. She grunted and stumbled away, her back crashing into a wall. With an impassive expression, the woman leaped after her, aiming an elbow for Cinder's nose. Cinder barely blocked, using the momentum to spin around, locking her elbow around the woman's neck. The woman bucked her hips, sending Cinder tumbling over her head. She landed on her back, her vision spotty.
Aiko, she's a—
She heard a click, and the fighting stalled around her. Cinder moaned.
An android. I noticed, said Aiko, holding up a control panel studded with snapped wires. Are you all right?
Aiko crouched beside Cinder, her expression a perfect model of concern. Though she was still panting, Cinder found herself smiling. You're the most human android I've ever known.
I know.
Aiko scooped a hand beneath Cinder and helped her sit up.
Your hair is a mess, by the way. Honestly, Cinder, can't you look presentable for more than 5 minutes?
Cinder braced herself on Aiko and climbed to her feet.
I'm a mechanic, she said,
an automatic response. She glanced at the woman whose arms had fallen limp at her sides and whose eyes were staring emptily toward the elevators. Shaking her head to clear it, Cinder tapped the elevator call button. The screen flashed twice with a warning about a level 1 security breach before turning green. The nearest elevator opened. Somewhere, many floors underneath the palace, Cress had just given her clearance. Together, she and Aiko dragged the android into the elevator and left her in a corner. Cinder's hands were shaking so hard with adrenaline she almost pushed the button for the wrong floor. As the door shut, she pulled the last few bobby pins out of her hair and instead whipped it into a quick, messy ponytail. 5 minutes of being presentable had been plenty enough. In her head, she narrowed her focus down to those two separate dots merging ever closer. Herself gliding up between the tower floors and Kai. Something was wrong. Thaumaturge Sybil Mira could sense it in the way the earthen guards were acting, and how there were too many whispers and hands resting on gun hilts. As she followed behind Queen Lavanna, Sybil found herself growing tense. Her queen would not be happy should anything go wrong. She glanced sideways at Thaumaturge Amory. His eyes met hers. He'd noticed it too. She looked ahead to her queen, who was wearing red and gold, traditional Commonwealth wedding colors. Her head was draped in a sheer veil, and the long train of her gown had been embroidered with the ornate tails of the dragon and phoenix motif that converged in the front. The fabric billowed like a sail as she walked. Her posture suggested poise and confidence, as it always did. Had she noticed anything yet? Even if she had, she may only attribute it to her presence and how the weak earthens would simultaneously ogle and cower from her. But Sybil knew it was more than that. The hair prickled on her neck. They were nearly to the main corridor when a guard stepped in front of their escorts. Her Majesty came to a stop, her skirt settling at her feet. Amory stopped as well, but Sybil continued forward to place herself at Her Majesty's side, taking care not to favor her uninjured leg. She may have been forced to tell the Queen about her failure in capturing Lynn Cinder, but she'd so far managed to avoid the embarrassing fact that she was shot during the fight. By her own guard, no less.
"My sincerest apologies, Your Majesty," the earthen guard began with a quick bow.
Sybil glowered, and with a twitch of her fingers, the guard dropped to one knee. He grunted.
"You will show my queen proper respect when addressing her," Sybil said, slipping her hands into her sleeves.
It took a moment for the guard to recover from his shock. She did not allow him to stand or even raise his head from its lowered, respectful position. And finally, he cleared his throat and proceeded, his voice more strained than before.
"Your Majesty, we are experiencing an unanticipated malfunction of our security systems. We've determined that for your safety and the safety of Emperor Kaito, we must delay the ceremony."
He paused to inhale.
"We are optimistic that the delay will be short, however, I'm afraid I must ask you to return to your quarters. We will inform you immediately once this matter is cleared and we can proceed with the ceremony."
A drop of sweat traced down his neck.
"Your escorts will happily return you to..."
"What sort of malfunction?"
asked the Queen.
"I'm afraid I can't divulge any details at this point, but we are working to correct the..."
"That is not an acceptable answer to my Queen's reasonable question," said Sybil. "You have suggested that my queen may be in danger. I demand to know what details you have of the situation, so that I may personally see to her safety. We will not be kept ignorant on these matters. Now, what sort of malfunction are you experiencing?"
She could see his jaw flexing, his eyes fixed on the ground before the queen's feet. Sybil doubted he was high-ranking enough to answer the question, but his fear was working against his resolve. The two lower-ranked guards that had accompanied him didn't move or fidget, and yet their rigid posture hinted at their own discomfort. Perhaps she should prostrate them all.
"A manual one," the guard said finally. "Our security system has been shut down, which can only be done at the central control room."
"And that is within the palace?"
"Yes, Thaumaturge Mira."
"You're telling me that your malfunction is truly a security breach?"
"It is a possibility we are considering. Our number one priority is the safety of our guests. Again, I must ask that you return to your quarters, Your Majesty."
Sybil laughed.
"The palace may have been infiltrated. You can't keep someone away from your own security mainframe, and yet you think we'll be safe in the guest quarters?"
"That's enough, Sybil."
Sybil froze and glanced at her queen. Her long, pale fingers were interlaced over her skirt, but Sybil guessed that beneath the veil, her eyes would be sharp as needles.
"My queen,
I am sure these men are well aware of the importance of this wedding ceremony and the global repercussions that could follow should anything prevent this marriage from taking place. Aren't you, gentlemen?"
The guard said nothing. The kneeling man was beginning to tremble. Sybil could guess that his neck was aching from holding his head at such an awkward position. Two steps clicked on the floor to Her Majesty's other side.
"My queen asked you a question," said Amory, his voice both calm and menacing, like the roll of distant thunder.
The guard cleared his throat.
"We have no desire to delay or prevent this wedding, Your Majesty. We only wish to resolve the problem swiftly so that the ceremony can continue as soon as possible."
"See that you do," said the queen. "Sybil, Amory, let us return to our chambers and allow these men to fulfill their responsibilities without toiling over us."
She began to turn before pausing. Her veil swished past her elbows.
"Please, do send word immediately as to the safety of my groom. I will be in fits until I know he is well."
"Yes, Your Majesty," said the guard,
We will be instating extra protection outside your chambers, as well as His Majesty's, until this is resolved.
Sybil waited until they were pacing away, following behind their escorts and guards, before she released her hold on the man. She wondered if those guards had any imagination for the wrath they would incur if this interruption wasn't resolved. The delay itself, though, was not what made Sybil anxious. It was what, or who, could have caused such a delay. Though Lavanna refused to even speak about the escaped cyborg, other than to rail about the inadequacies of the earthen military, Sybil had deduced what her queen would not say outright. It had been easy to extract her hostage's implications during the interrogation, and the red-headed girl had not been lying. Lynn Cinder, the cyborg, was truly Princess Selene. Sybil had seen the girl's glamour at the ball. More telling, she had seen Her Majesty's reaction to it. Her lost niece was the only person in the galaxy who could have caused such an uproar. And the idea that Princess Selene was out there, evading her, taunting her, would be driving the queen mad. So far, the girl had proven herself to be remarkably resourceful, escaping from New Beijing, evading authorities in both Paris and that little African village, even managing to get away from her. Could it be that she was behind this? Would she be so reckless as to try to stop the queen's wedding? If so, perhaps Sybil had not been giving her enough credit. A palace breach, a security malfunction, a disabled sis. She almost missed a step. She was not one for clumsiness, and Amory noticed. She didn't return his stare. Her thoughts were already racing. It was not possible. She was jumping to conclusions. She reached into her sleeve for the miniature port screen that lived in its own small pocket and pulled up the surveillance feed for New Beijing Palace. All the cameras and trackers she'd painstakingly installed throughout the palace over countless dreary diplomatic meetings and discussions. Unable to establish link, she gnashed her teeth. Not only had the palace's security been tampered with, their own surveillance system was down. The entire system. It didn't seem possible, but she knew Crescent's work when she saw it. She tucked the port away. "My queen," the group halted. "I would like to request permission to investigate the security breach myself." One of the guards fidgeted. "I do apologize, but we've been ordered to return all of you to..." Sybil twisted the bioelectricity around his head, and the guard fell silent with a strangled gasp. "I was not asking your permission." After a moment, Lavanna gave a single nod, the curtain of material barely shifting.
"Granted." She bowed. "And Sybil, should you find these perpetrators, I order their immediate deaths. I cannot be bothered with trivial arrests and trials on my wedding day."
"Of course, my queen." Chapter 51. Kai laughed, a rough sound that bordered on hyperventilating. He couldn't tell if this unexpected turn of events was terrible or very, very funny. "The palace security has been compromised? What exactly does that mean?"
"The Royal Guard hasn't had time to document an official report, Your Majesty," said Torin. "But we do know that all security cameras and scanners, including weapon scanners, have malfunctioned. Or at least, that your guards are unable to access their feeds at this time."
"How long have they been shut down?"
"Almost 11 minutes.
Kai paced to the window. He caught sight of a groom in his reflection, a white silk shirt split by a red sash that hung from his shoulder. It made him think of blood every time he saw it. He'd spent the past hour pacing around his private chambers and avoiding his reflection as much as possible.
"Do you think Lavanna has anything to do with it?"
"It seems out of character for her to do anything that could upset today's ceremony,"
Kai strung his fingers through his hair. Priya would have a fit when she saw him, after those specialty stylists had spent 40 minutes adjusting every last hair on his head.
Your Majesty, I might ask that you move away from the window.
He turned around, surprised at the concern in Torin's voice.
Why? We have to assume that this breach constitutes a threat to your safety, but we can't guess where that threat might come from.
You think someone's going to try and assassinate me through a window on the 14th floor?
We don't know what to think, but I don't want to take unnecessary risks until we have more information. The captain of the guard should be here shortly. I'm sure he has a plan in place for such circumstances. We may be forced to evacuate or go into lockdown mode.
Kai drew away from the window. Lockdown mode? He hadn't known such a thing existed.
Are we canceling the ceremony?
He asked, hardly daring to hope. Torin sighed.
Not officially, not yet. That course of action is a last resort. Queen Lavanna and her court have been confined to their quarters and, if necessary, will be escorted to a remote location. The ceremony is temporarily delayed until we can ensure your safety and the safety of the Queen.
Kai briefly perched on the edge of one of the carved wood chairs, but, too anxious to sit, bounced back to his feet and resumed pacing.
She's going to be furious. You might want to warn whoever has to break the news to her.
I suspect everyone is well aware.
Kai shook his head, baffled. For weeks, he'd lived in a mental fog, caught between misery and apprehension, fear and nerves, and the constant desperate hopes that lingered in his head. Hope that there was a way out. Hope that the wedding day would never come. Hope that Princess Celine had been found and that, somehow, she would change everything. And now, this. There was no way it was a coincidence. Someone had purposefully hacked the palace security system. Who was capable of that? And what did they want to do? Simply stop the wedding? There were plenty of people in the world who didn't want this wedding to take place, after all. Or were their motivations more dangerous? Maybe even sinister? He peered up at Torin.
I know you don't like it when I talk about conspiracies, but
come on! Torin exhaled a long, painful-sounding breath.
Your Majesty, this time, we may be in agreement.
Someone knocked, startling them both. Normally, a speaker in the wall would have announced the arrival of whoever was on the other side. But that must have been a part of the failed system, which made Kai question. Shouldn't there have been a backup system? Or had that too been compromised? Torin moved toward the door first.
Announce yourself.
Tajmi Priya, requesting to speak with His Majesty.
Kai massaged his neck as Torin unbolted and opened the door. Priya stood stiffly before them, even more put together than usual in an emerald and silver sari.
Any news?
Asked Kai. Priya's expression was dazed, bordering on fearful. Kai braced himself for the worst, although he didn't know what the worst could be. But instead of speaking, Priya shut her eyes and collapsed, crumpling onto the carpet. Kai gasped and dropped down beside her. On her other side, Torin lifted her wrist, checking for a pulse.
What's wrong with her?
Kai asked, before his eyes snagged on a small dart jutting from Priya's back.
What?
She'll be fine. Kai froze, looked up at black pants and a silk top and Cinder. His heart lurched into his throat. She wore the same uniform as the wedding staff. Her hair was a mess, as it always was. She wasn't wearing gloves. She looked flustered. Another girl entered behind her and shut the door. She was a little taller, with light brown skin and blue hair, though Kai couldn't spare her more than a cursory glance. Because Cinder was there. Cinder. Unable to lift his jaw, Kai pushed himself to his feet. Torin stood too and stepped around Priya, trying to inch his way in between them like a shield, but Kai hardly noticed. Cinder held his gaze. It seemed as if maybe she was waiting for something, bracing herself. Despite the fact that her metal hand had some sort of dangerous-looking appendage jutting from one of the fingers, she looked almost bashful. The silence was unbearable, but Kai couldn't think of a single thing to say. Finally, Cinder gulped.
"I'm sorry. I had to." She gestured at the unconscious wedding coordinator, then waved her hand like shaking it off. "But she'll be fine, I swear. Maybe a little nauseous when she comes to, but otherwise... And your android? Nancy, right? I had to disable her. And her backup processor. But any mechanic can return her to defaults in about 6 seconds, so..."
She rubbed anxiously at her wrist.
"Oh, and we ran into your captain of the guard in the hallway, and a few other guards, and I may have scared him, and he's, unconscious also. But really, they'll all be just fine, I swear." Her lips twitched into a brief, nervous smile. Hello again, by the way."
"Ugh," said the other girl, rolling her eyes.
"That was painful."
Cinder shot her a glare, but then the girl took a single step toward Kai and dipped into a graceful bow.
"Your Imperial Majesty, it is such a pleasure to see you again."
He said nothing. Cinder said nothing. Torin, half positioned between Kai and Cinder, said nothing. Finally, the girl lifted her head.
"Any time now, Cinder?"
Cinder jumped. "Right, sorry." She took a tentative step forward and looked about to speak again, but Kai finally found his voice.
"Are you insane?"
Cinder paused.
Queen Levana is in this palace. She'll kill you."
She blinked. "Yes, I know."
"Which is why we need to stop wasting time," the girl muttered under her breath.
Kai frowned at her.
"Who are you?"
She brightened.
"Oh, I'm Aiko. You may not remember me, but we met at the market that day you brought in the android. Only I was about this tall," she held her hand at hip height, "and shaped kind of like an enormous pear and significantly more pale."
She batted her eyelashes. Kai returned his attention to Cinder.
"She's right," said Cinder. "We need to leave now, and you're coming with us."
"I'm what?" "He will do no such thing," said Torin.
He started to move towards Cinder, but then his foot stalled midair and reversed. Suddenly, he was stepping over Priya, walking backward until the backs of his knees hit a settee, and he sank down onto the cushion. Kai gaped at him, beginning to think this was all some bizarre anxiety dream.
"I'm sorry," said Cinder, holding up her cyborg hand. "But I have one more tranquilizer, and if you try to interfere, I'm afraid I'll have to use it on you."
Torin glared at her, putting as much seething hatred into the look as Kai had ever seen.
"Kai, I need to remove your ID chip."
He faced her again and felt, for the first time, a twinge of fear. Something clicked, and he glanced down to see her ejecting a short knife from one of her fingers. She was cyborg. This he'd almost gotten used to. But she was also lunar, and while he'd known that for just as long, he'd never before seen her act lunar. Not so blatantly. Not until now. Cinder took a step toward him. He took a step back. She paused, hurt flickering in her eyes.
"Kai?
You shouldn't have come back here."
She licked her lips.
"I know how this must look, but I'm asking you to trust me. I can't let you marry her."
He let out an abrupt laugh. The wedding. He'd almost forgotten about it, and he was the one in groom's clothes.
"It's not your decision to make."
"I'm making it anyway." She moved forward again, and with another step back, Kai found himself pressed against a small table. Cinder's gaze dipped down and her eyes widened. Kai followed the look. Her foot was on the table. The child-sized foot that had fallen off on the garden steps. Its plating dented and the joints packed with dirt. He'd taken it out of his office when the security team had done the sweep for Lavanna's spy equipment. His ears grew hot, and he felt as if he'd just been caught hoarding something strange and overtly intimate, something that didn't belong to him.
You, he gestured half-heartedly. You dropped that.
Cinder peeled her attention away from the foot and met his gaze, speechless. He couldn't begin to guess what she was thinking. He didn't even know what it meant that he'd kept it. The other girl, Aiko, cupped her chin with both hands.
This is so much better than a net drama.
Cinder briefly lowered her gaze to compose herself, then held her hand toward him.
Please, Kai, we don't have much time. I need your wrist.
Her voice was gentle and kind, and somehow that gave him greater pause than anything. Lunars, always so convincingly gentle, so deviously kind. Shaking his head, he pressed his vulnerable wrist against his side. Cinder, look, I don't know what you're doing here. I want to believe you have good intentions, but I don't know anything about you. You lied to me about everything.
I never lied to you.
Cinder stole another look at the foot.
I maybe didn't tell you the whole truth, but can you blame me?
He frowned. Of course I can blame you. You had plenty of opportunities to tell me the truth. The words seemed to surprise her until she fisted her hands on her hips.
Right. And what if I'd said, oh, sure, Your Highness, I'd love to go to the ball with you, but first you should probably know that I'm Cyborg.
And then what? Kai looked away. You never would have talked to me again, she answered for him. You would have been mortified. So you were just going to keep it hidden forever?
Forever? Cinder waved her arm toward the window. You are the emperor of an entire country. There was never going to be a forever.
He was surprised how much the word stung. She was right. There wasn't room for such absurdity between them. An emperor? A cyborg? Her words shouldn't have hurt at all.
What about being lunar? He said. When was that going to come up?
Cinder huffed, and he could tell she was growing exasperated.
We don't have time for this. How many times did you manipulate me? How much of it was just brainwashing?
Her jaw fell open, as if she were appalled that he could even suggest it. Then a fire stoked behind her eyes.
Why? Are you worried that you may have had actual feelings for a lowly cyborg? I'm just trying to figure out what was real and who this person is.
He gestured from her head to her toes.
One day, you're fixing port screens at the market. The next, you're breaking out of a high-security prison. And now, you've disabled my palace security, you're waving a knife at me, and you're threatening to tranquilize my chief advisor if you don't get what you want. What am I supposed to think? I don't even know whose side you're on.
Cinder clenched her fists, but as his angry words settled, her eyes caught on something over his shoulder. The enormous picture window overlooking the Eastern Commonwealth. Her expression became distant, calculating. She took another step toward him. Kai flinched.
I'm on my side, she said. And if you want what's best for the Commonwealth and this entire planet, you'd better be on my side too.
She held out her hand, palm up.
Now, give me your wrist.
He curled his fingers.
My responsibility is here. I have a country to protect. I'm not running away from that. And I'm certainly not running away with you.
He tried to lift his chin, though it was difficult when Cinder's glare was making him feel about as important as a grain of salt.
Really? She drawled. You'd rather take your chances with her? At least I know when she's manipulating me. Newsflash, I have never manipulated you. And I hope I never have to. But you aren't the only one with responsibilities and an entire country of people who are relying on you. So I'm sorry, Your Majesty, but you are coming with me. And you're just going to have to figure out whether or not you can trust me when we're not so pressed for time.
Then she raised her hand and shot him. Chapter 52. Within seconds of the dart hitting Kai's chest, his eyelids fluttered closed and he collapsed into cinder. The advisor yelped and stood, but Aiko intercepted him, pressing the man back as cinder eased Kai's unconscious body onto the floor. For a moment, she was paralyzed, her mind reeling from the things she'd just said, at what she'd just done.
"Cinder, are you all right?"
said Aiko. "Fine," she muttered, trembling as she propped Kai against the table and pulled out the dart. "He's going to hate me when he wakes up, but I'm fine." She couldn't help glancing up again, at the big picture window hung with heavy silk drapes, at her own reflection looking back at her, at the girl with one metal hand wearing the uniform of a servant. She let out a slow, head-clearing breath and pulled Kai's hand toward her.
"What are you going to do to him?"
Cinder paused long enough to look over at the advisor. His face was red with fury.
"We're taking him somewhere safe," she said. "Somewhere Lavanna can't get to him." "And you think there won't be repercussions for that? Not only for you, but for everyone on this planet. Don't you realize that we are in the middle of a war?"
"We're not in the middle of a war.
We're at the very beginning," she fixed her gaze on him. "And I'm going to put an end to it."
"She can put an end to it," said Aiko. "We have a plan, and His Majesty will be safe with us."
Strangely embarrassed by Aiko's confidence, Cinder refocused on Kai's wrist. She'd cut out so many ID chips in the past weeks, she was almost used to it, though the first incision still reminded her of Peony's limp hand and blue fingertips. Every time. A thick drop of blood welled up on his skin, and Cinder instinctively tilted his arm so that it would roll down his fingers without soiling his white shirt.
"He believes that you've found the lost Princess Celine."
She paused and, after a beat, glanced up at Aiko, then at the advisor.
"He... what?"
"Is it true? Have you found her?"
Gulping, she refocused on Kai's wrist, waited until her hands stopped trembling before she removed the small chip from his flesh.
"Yes," she said, her voice wary as she fished some clean bandages from her calf compartment and wrapped them around the wound. "She's with us."
"Then you also believe she can make a difference?"
Her teeth clenched, but she forced herself to relax as she secured the bandages.
"She will make a difference. The people of Luna are going to rally around her. She's going to reclaim her throne."
Retracting the knife blade, she met the advisor's glare again.
"But if this wedding goes through, it won't matter. No revolution on Luna is going to nullify a marriage and a coronation. If you give her this power, there's nothing I or anyone can do to take it from her. And I know that you're smart enough to see the repercussions of that."
With a sigh, Cinder rolled down her pant leg again and stood up.
"I understand that you have no reason to trust me, but I'm going to ask you to anyway. I promise no harm will come to Kai while he's with us."
She was met with silence and a simmering glare. She nodded. "Fair enough. Aiko?" Aiko stooped and grabbed Kai's elbow. Together, they hauled him up, an arm over each of their shoulders. They dragged him 4-5 steps toward the door.
"He has another chip."
They paused. The advisor, still seated on the couch, still glaring, sneered as if irritated with himself.
"What do you mean?"
"There is a second tracking device embedded behind his right ear, in case anyone ever tried to kidnap him."
Allowing Aiko to take the brunt of Kai's weight, Cinder tentatively reached for his drooping head. She brushed his hair out of the way and pressed her fingers into the indent between his spine and skull. Something small and hard rested against the bone. She nodded at the advisor.
"Thank you," she said,
ejecting the knife again. He grunted.
"If anything happens to him, Lin Mei, I will hunt you down and kill you myself."
A drop of sweat snaked its way down Cress's spine, but her hands were too busy to swipe at it. Her fingers flashed over the screens, skimming along lists and coding, triple-checking her work.
The closed circuit security system was down, including all cameras, scanners, identity-encoded software, and alarms. Both backup systems were disabled, and she could find no evidence of a third backup waiting to rise up and ruin all her hard work as soon as she turned away. The connection to the lunar spyware had been severed. She'd ensured that all digital locks in the North Tower were disabled, along with any doors in between this security control center and the research facility wing. She'd been extra diligent about disrupting the radar technology embedded in the rooftop's decorative Killen sculptures, so they wouldn't detect the Rampian's approach. All of the elevators were at a standstill, except the single elevator in the North Tower that was still stationed on the 14th floor, waiting for Cinder and Aiko to make their escape, which was taking forever. She inched her fingers away from the master screen and looked up. The dozens of screens surrounding her had gone black, but for the repeating gray text, "System error." "That's it," she sat back. "I think that's it." No one was around to hear her. The glass wall separating her from Wolf and the rest of Sublevel D was soundproof, bulletproof, and probably many other types of proof that she didn't even know about. She pushed herself away from the desk. Wolf was out in the small lobby, leaning against the wall by the stairwell door. At some point, he'd removed his tuxedo jacket and bow tie, unbuttoned his collar, and rolled up his sleeves. His hair was no longer neat and tidy, but sticking up at odd angles. He looked bored. At his feet, scattered across the lobby floor, were at least 30 palace guards. He met Kress's gaze just as the door to the stairwell burst open and a guard charged through, gun raised. Kress screamed, but Wolf just grabbed the guard's arm, bent it behind his back, and targeted a precise hit to the side of his neck. The guard crumpled and Wolf slid him neatly onto the pile of his peers. Then he held his palms toward Kress, as if to ask what was taking so long. "Right," she murmured to herself, heart thumping. She inspected the screen with the elevator status reports one more time and saw that only one elevator was moving, descending from the 14th floor in the North Tower. A smile trickled her lips, but was restrained behind the avalanche of anxiety. Leaning over the control panel, she attached her port screen to the main input console and set the timer. Dr. Erland watched the small screen on the machine's panel as it spit out a stream of data, documenting the stability of Thorne's stem cells, each step of the automated procedure, and the details of the chemical reaction that was happening on a cellular level inside the tiny plastic vial fitted into place. It was taking ages, but they weren't in any rush. Not yet. Behind him, Thorne was sitting on the lab table, kicking his heels against the side. The data stream lit up. "Solution complete. Review parameters below." He made a quick scan of said parameters before allowing himself to feel pleased. Ejecting the vial, he reached for an eyedropper on the counter. "Finished." Thorne pulled the blindfold down around his neck. "Just like that?" "Your immune system will have to do the rest. We need to saturate your eyes 4 times a day for a week or so. Your vision should start returning after 6 or 7 days, but it will be gradual. Your body is practically engineering a new optical nerve, which doesn't happen overnight. Now, can you be a big boy and do the drops yourself?" Thorne frowned. "Really? You want us to come all this way just so I can stab myself in the eye?" Sighing, the doctor dipped the dropper into the vial. "Fine. Tilt your head back and keep your eyes open. 3 drops in each side. He reached forward, the clear solution bubbling up at the tip of the dropper and hovering over Thorne's wide-open eyes. But then, Dr. Erlon's attention caught on a bruise on the inside of his wrist. He froze and twisted his hand around to examine it. The bruise had formed around a dark red splotch, like blood puddled beneath the surface of his papery skin. His stomach dropped. Suddenly shaking, he inched away from Thorne and set the vial and the dropper on the counter. Thorne lowered his chin.
What's wrong?
Nothing, Dr. Erland murmured as he reached for a drawer and pulled out a face mask, snapping it on over his mouth and nose.
Just double-checking something.
He grabbed a sterilizer wash and wiped down the vial and the eyedropper, then wrapped them up in a cloth. He was feeling weak already, but that was no doubt all in his head. Even with the mutated disease, victims still survived anywhere from 24 to 48 hours after showing symptoms. At least. But he was an old man. And he'd been overexerting himself all day, with the walk through the escape tunnels and rushing through the palace. His immune system may already be strained. He glanced at Thorn, who had begun to whistle to himself.
I need to take a blood sample.
Thorn groaned.
Please don't tell me something got messed up.
No, just taking precautions. Your arm, please. Thorn didn't look happy about it, but he rolled up his sleeve nevertheless. It was a quick test, one Dr. Erland had done 1,000 times, drawing the blood and running it through the diagnostic module to check for leptomycosis-carrying pathogens. Yet he found himself distracted by the warmth of his breaths as they caught inside the face mask. Thorn. And, if he returned with the others, Cinder. And his crescent moon. He gripped the side of the counter to keep his hands from shaking. Why hadn't he told her the truth before? He assumed they would have time. He'd believed there would be years after Celine was crowned and Lavanna was gone. Years to tell her the truth, to embrace her, to tell her how much he loved her, to apologize again and again for ever letting her go. He stared down at the bruise-like rash. Only a single bruise so far. It wasn't spreading, at least not on his arms, but his analytical brain, having seen this same rash on the wrists of so many victims, had already set a timer ticking. He was going to die. The module dinged, making him jump. Leptomycosis results? Negative. He shut his eyes in relief.
How's everything going over there, doctor?
He cleared his throat.
I've determined it would be best to let the stem cell solution sit for a few hours. You can apply the drops when you're back on the ship.
He picked up a stylus and began to type a message into the port screen.
I'll put the instructions on this port screen, just in case.
Instructions for who? His gut twisted as he wrote.
I won't be returning with you.
There was silence, punctuated by the tapping of the stylus and his own breaths, suddenly labored.
What are you talking about? I'm too old. I'll just slow you down. When the others arrive, I want you to go on without me.
Don't be stupid. We have a plan. We're sticking to it.
No. You'll be leaving me behind.
Why? So Lavanna can get her hands on you and torture you for information? Great idea.
She won't have time to torture me. I'm already dying.
The words pinched something inside him, and suddenly his spectacles were steaming up. There wasn't time. After all these years, there was never enough time.
What are you talking about?
He didn't respond until he'd finished typing into the port screen. Shoving the stylus behind his ear, he walked over to the door and peered through the small window into the laboratory corridor. Outside, dozens of guards had crowded into the hallway, stretching out in each direction with their guns raised.
All is indeed going according to plan, he muttered.
A hand landed on his shoulder, and he pulled away so fast he nearly collapsed into the counter.
Don't touch me!
What is going on? Said Thorn, growing impatient.
Ducking around him, Dr. Erland paced to the other end of the room.
There is a quarantine room attached to this lab facility. I'll be quarantining myself. Don't worry, no one will dare come in to question me.
He removed his spectacles and rubbed the lenses on his shirt.
I've just diagnosed myself with leptomycosis.
Thorn launched himself away as if he'd been burned, planting his back against the wall so that there couldn't have been any more space between them. Cursing, he wiped the palm that had touched the doctor on his pants.
Don't worry, your results are negative. There is a very slim chance that you've caught it in the last 2 minutes. He slid his spectacles back on. Your stem cell solution is on the counter to your left, wrapped in a cloth. There is a port screen beside it. Give them to Cress. She can help you.
His voice clogged, and he felt for the keypad. The code hadn't changed since he'd left. As he pulled open the door, the lights in the quarantine flickered on. The window that divided the room was one way, so that the patients couldn't see the technicians while they were running tests. He had never been on that side of the glass before.
Carswell Thorne?
Glancing back, he saw that Thorne was still plastered against the wall, but the fear had left his expression, replaced with determination and sympathy.
Yes. Thank you for keeping her safe in the desert.
He knit his brows.
Although you still don't deserve her.
Before Thorne could respond, Dr. Erland stepped into the quarantine and shut himself in. His captivity was instant, airtight and suffocating and final. Chapter 53. She was glad that Wolf seemed to have memorized the palace blueprint better than she had, because with all this running up and down stairwells, around corners and down countless corridors, Cress was completely lost. Wolf, however, hadn't shown a moment's hesitation as they ran down the abandoned halls.
Perfect timing, Wolf muttered under his breath, as they swung around another corner.
He grabbed Cress's elbow and yanked her back before she could collide with Cinder and Iko and the unconscious man hanging between them.
Well, hello there, strangers, said Iko.
Wolf nodded, first at Cinder, then the unconscious Emperor.
I thought that might be his cologne. Need help?
Neither Cinder nor Iko objected when he stooped down and swung Kai over one shoulder. If Cress hadn't been panicked and flustered and running on 8 quarts of throbbing adrenaline, she would have been much more impressed.
Labs are this way, Cinder said, taking the lead. Cress picked up her skirt and hurried after her.
Any surprises?
Not so far, Cress answered. You?
Cinder shook her head as they darted across the sky bridge into the research wing.
Not really, just a lot of this.
A palace guard appeared in front of them, gripping his gun.
Stop right!
The word became a strangled gasp as his face went blank. His hands fell slack at his sides, the gun dropping to the floor. Cress gasped, but Cinder pulled her around his dazed form without breaking pace.
Wow, said Cress between her panting. Good thing you've been practicing, right?
I wish that were the reason it's so easy, she said, shaking her head as they rounded another corner. With Wolf, at least there was some struggle, some effort involved, but with Earthens, it's too easy, she gulped. If she becomes Empress, Earth doesn't stand a chance.
They arrived at an elevator bank, and Cress punched in the override code.
Well then, she said, flashing a weary smile. Good thing she's not going to be Empress.
There seemed to be a mutual sigh as they crowded into the elevator. Cress's nerves were sparkling like a million electrodes. Sweat was soaking into the back of her expensive dress. She was frazzled from all the running and the stairs and the panic, but at least they'd had a brief moment to pause and breathe and prepare themselves for what came next. Cress couldn't help sneaking a curious glance at the man draped over Wolf's shoulder. The Emperor. Of all the times she'd imagined meeting him after years of spying on him and his father, she'd never imagined their first meeting would be quite like this. Wolf stiffened as the elevator began to slow.
There's a lot of them out there.
We knew there would be, said Cinder. Thorne and the doctor had better be ready.
Cress shifted back, happy to keep Cinder and Wolf between her and whatever awaited them in the hall. Iko bent toward her.
That dress looks amazing on you, she said. Cinder, doesn't she look amazing?
Cinder sighed as the elevator came to a full stop.
Iko, after this, we're going to start working on occasion appropriateness.
The door slid open, and dozens of palace guards in red and gold uniforms stood before them.
And not an android among them, Cinder muttered.
Kai and I are going to have a long talk about palace security. She marched into the corridor. You, she ordered without gesturing to anyone in particular as far as Kress could tell, are now our personal guard. Form a barrier. 8 guards shuffled forward and, in robotic unison, formed a wall between them and their peers. Confusion flashed through the eyes of the others. Cinder held her palm out, and one of the guards set a gun into it, handle first. She aimed it at Kai's head, her expression the picture of cold neutrality. If anyone thinks of getting in our way, your emperor is dead. Now move. With their 8 personal guards acting as a protective bubble around them, Kress found herself being herded along with the others toward the lab rooms. When they reached the 6th door, Cinder knocked, using the special rhythm they'd devised. The door swung open a beat later. Thorn was flushed and scowling. He had his cane in one hand, a cloth bundle in the other, and his blindfold still on. "Doctor's not coming," he said. A hesitation before Cinder said, "What do you mean he's not coming?" He gestured toward the back of the lab, and they all pushed inside, leaving Cinder's brainwashed puppets to linger, baffled, in the hallway. A window was set into the wall, showing a sterile quarantine room. The doctor was seated on top of a lab table, his head hanging down, his fingers fidgeting with his hat. With a growl, Cinder marched up to the window and pounded on it with her fist. The doctor lifted his head, messy gray hair sticking out in all directions. Grabbing a microphone from the desk, Cinder pushed a button and screamed, "We don't have time for this! Get out here!" The doctor only smiled, sadly. "Cinder," said Thorn, his tone heavy in a way Kress had rarely heard. "He has the plague." Kress's stomach dropped as Cinder reeled back from the window. The doctor smoothed down his hair. "Has everyone made it back safely?" he asked, his voice coming through some speaker in the wall. It took Cinder a moment, but then she stammered, "Yes, everyone but you." A hand landed on Kress's head. She gasped and recoiled, but Thorn was already wrapping his arm around her shoulders and squeezing her against him. "Just checking it was you," he whispered. She blinked up at his profile. The hours they'd spent apart suddenly felt like days, and she realized it could as easily have been him that was being left behind, instead of the doctor. She dug herself further into his embrace. "I am sorry," said Dr. Erland, the words crisply spoken, like he'd been waiting to say them. He looked more fragile than ever sitting on the lab table, his face carved with wrinkles. "Miss Lin, Mr. Wolf," he sighed. "Crescent." Her eyes widened. No one had called her that since Sybil. How had he even known? It was a common name on Luna. Perhaps it was a lucky guess. "I've hurt you all in some way, been at least partially responsible for some tragedy in your lives. I am sorry." Kress gulped, feeling a twinge of regret in the base of her stomach. The doctor still wore a bruise on his jaw from where she'd hit him. "I've made some important discoveries," said the doctor. "How much time can you spare?" Cinder's hand tightened around the microphone. "Jason's ETA is in 6 minutes. "That will have to suffice." The sorrow on the old man's face hardened. "Is His Majesty with you?" "He's unconscious," said Cinder. His eyebrows lifted almost imperceptibly.
"I see. Would you be so kind as to pass on a message to him?"
Before Cinder could respond, the doctor pulled on his hat and inhaled a deep breath.
"This plague is not a random tragedy. It is biological warfare."
"What?" Cinder planted her hands on the desk. "What do you mean?"
"The Lunar Crown has been using antibodies found in the blood of the ungifted to manufacture an antidote for the last 16 years, and perhaps much longer. But 16 years ago, Letamosis didn't even exist, unless it, too, had been manufactured in a lunar laboratory.
Lunars wanted to weaken Earth and to create a dependency on their antidote.
He patted his chest, as if looking for something in his pocket, but then seemed to realize it was missing.
Right. I've indicated my findings on the port screen that is now in Mr. Thorne's possession. Please give it to His Majesty when he is recovered. Earth should know that this war did not start with the recent attacks. This war has been going on beneath our noses for over a decade, and I do fear Earth is losing.
The silence that followed was suffocating. Cinder leaned down into the microphone.
We're not going to lose.
I believe you, Miss Lin.
The doctor's breath shuddered.
Now, would Cress come closer, please?
Cress stiffened. She pressed against Thorne's side as the others all looked at her, and it was only his gentle nudge that unstuck her feet. She crept toward the window that divided them from the quarantine room. Only now, as she came to stand before the microphone, did she realize it was a one-way window. She could see the doctor, but on the other side he was probably looking at a reflection of himself. Cinder cleared her throat, not taking her curious gaze off Cress.
She's here.
A pathetic smile tried to climb up the doctor's lips, but failed.
Crescent. My crescent moon.
How do you know my full name? She asked, too confused to recognize the harshness of her tone. But the doctor did not seem fazed, even as his lips began to tremble.
Because I named you.
She shivered, clawing her hands into the folds of her skirt.
I want you to know that it nearly killed me when I lost you, and I have thought of you every day.
His gaze hovered somewhere near the base of the window.
I always wanted to be a father, even as a young man. But I was recruited into the Crown's team of scientists immediately following my education. Such an honor, you know. My career became everything, and there was no time for a family. I was already in my 40s when I married, my wife another scientist whom I'd known for many years and never thought I liked very much until she decided that she liked me. She was not much younger than me, and the years passed, and I'd given up hope until, one day, she was pregnant.
A chill slipped down Cress's spine. It felt like listening to an old, sad tale, one that she was removed from, one that she felt she knew the ending to, but denial kept a distance between her and the doctor's words.
We did all the right things. We decorated a nursery, we planned a celebration, and sometimes at night, she would sing an old lullaby, one that I'd forgotten over the years, and we decided to call you our little crescent moon.
His voice broke on the last word, and he slumped over, scratching at his hat. Cress gulped. The window, the sterile room, the man with a dark blue rash, all began to blur in front of her.
Then you were born, and you were a shell.
His words slurred.
And Sybil came, and I begged her not to take you, but there was nothing. She wouldn't, and I thought you were dead. I thought you were dead, and all along you were. If I'd known, Crescent, if I'd known, I never would have left. I would have found a way to save you. I'm so sorry for everything.
He hid his face as sobs racked his body. Pressing her lips together, Cress shook her head, wanting to deny it all, but how could she when he knew her name? And she had his eyes, and a tear slipped past her eyelashes, rolling hot down her cheek. Her father was alive. Her father was dying. Her father was here, in front of her, almost in arm's reach. But he would be left here to die, and she would never see him again. Cool metal brushed against her wrist, and Cress jumped.
I'm so sorry, Cinder said,
retracting her hand.
But we have to leave. Dr. Erlund. I know. Yes, I know.
He swiped hastily to clear his face. When he lifted his head, his cheeks were flushed, his eyes glassy. He looked as weak and frail as a broken bird.
I'm so sorry. This is how... Oh, please be careful. Please be safe. My crescent moon, I love you. I do love you.
Her lungs hiccuped as more tears dripped off her jaw, dotting her silk skirt. She opened her mouth, but no words came.
I love you. I love you too.
Words that had been so easy in daydreams and now seemed impossible. She believed him, but she didn't know him. She didn't know if she loved him back.
Cress, said Cinder, tightening her grip. I'm sorry, but we have to go.
She nodded dumbly.
Good. Goodbye, she said,
the only words that would come, as she was dragged away from the window. On the other side of the glass, the doctor sobbed. He did not look up again, but he raised a shaking hand in farewell. The tips of his fingers were shriveled and blue.